Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream us online weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. To add your voice to our discussions, give us a call at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRIMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Kerri Miller. This is NPR News. Now to the political geography of these proposed tariffs. Here in the upper Midwest, I think this came out in our discussion with Ken, the tariffs aren't academic. You can drive a few minutes outside of our city centers and you'll encounter wide fields of corn and soybeans. In fact, China spends $2 billion a year just on Minnesota soybeans. So as our two guests join us to talk about the effect and the purpose of the tariffs, I'd like to hear from you. If you work in the ag or manufacturing sectors, are you already calculating the costs of these proposed retaliatory tariffs? And for the rest of us, do you think this is an effective way to get China to reform the way that they manage their economy? So I want to know if you're in the ag or manufacturing sectors, whether you're already adding up the costs of these proposed tariffs. And for the rest of us, just from a political standpoint, do you think this is an effective way to get China to change their ways? Here's the number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter, at Kerri NPR. One of our guests is Pradhna Joshi. She's Politico's trade and agriculture editor. She's with us from Washington. And Pradhna, I understand you prefer PJ, as in your byline. Is that right?
Yes, most people call me PJ.
It's really good to have you on the show. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
And Mary Lovely is with us. She's an economist at Syracuse University and a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute. And she's also with us from D.C. And Mary, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So, PJ, if you look at the U.S. as a whole, is it a wash? I guess, does it even out? If you calculate the benefits to the states that produce products like steel and aluminum with the burdens of the Midwest and the South and these big ag centers, is it a wash politically for the president?
Well, it's that's a very good question. I mean, there is certainly some indication that the people in the Midwest, in steel country especially, are glad that he is stepping up and retaliating against against China's China. Although I think he probably did it a little backwards, because most people would agree that the second set of tariffs that he announced, in retaliation for the forced technology transfers, that's more of a serious problem in terms of what American businesses see. So that probably would have been better to try and attack that problem first rather than a straight-up steel tariff, which is already in effect. But so that remains to be a question, because I think in retaliation for the second set of tariffs, China has been very strategic in attacking some of the heartland critical products. Everything
we've
from
noticed.
Whiskey to soybean. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Everything from whiskey to soybeans to aluminum foil. So those are going to certainly impact American farms a lot more than the first set of tariffs would.
Mary, I want to make sure that we're using terms, that we're defining some of these terms. PJ mentioned these forced technology transfers. Are they when China forces U.S. companies that want to operate in their economy to share their intellectual property? Is that what that is?
Well, I think this is a great question, because even though we have a very long report from the U.S. Trade Representative, the scope, the dimensions, the methods to which we are objecting are really quite unclear. I think most of us think of forced tech transfer as somehow Chinese firms obtaining U.S. intellectual property in a way that reduces the value to the U.S. company. And that could take many forms, such as the partners learning how to create a product and then creating a side business to sell that. It could be where American companies feel pressured to license intellectual property to a Chinese company at below market rates, which is something that was specifically mentioned in the USTR, U.S. Trade Representative report. It could be outright theft. We have many cases of intellectual property theft. So there's a whole gamut of behaviors that kind of get lumped into this forced tech transfer idea.
And Mary, do you look at what PJ brought up with how strategic China has been with this list of proposed retaliatory tariffs and say, boy, they really understand the United States and they understand the economy and they are looking where they can be most punitive. And part of that is coming to the Midwest.
Well, unfortunately, I think they understand us better than we understand them. And the belief that because they export more to us than we buy from them, that somehow we have the upper hand, I think, is mistaken. And I think it could lead to some sad outcomes for families in the U.S. that depend on the products that will be hit by China's tariffs, or even just lost business as our other trading partners step up to sell to China in the face of sort of this, you know, bad blood between the two countries. So, yeah, they really do know us. They think a lot about this relationship. It's very important to them. I don't see us having the same kind of laser focus that they do.
Oh, really interesting.
And also, Carrie,
go ahead, PJ.
I was going to say, I wanted to add that their one set of tariffs is in effect as of last Monday. That is the 25% tariff that China imposed on pork imports and the 15% tariff that China imposed on other about 100 other goods, such as wine, cherries, almonds, and aluminum foil. So American farmers are already sort of starting to experience the first set of tariffs. And to be sure, tariffs are a tax on consumers. So this is a tax on Chinese consumers as well as a tax on American consumers. Chinese consumers are already going to start experiencing these tariffs when they try to go buy American pork in Chinese supermarkets.
Call here from Andy in Hibbing. Hi, Andy. Tell me a little bit about yourself. You're on the Iron Range, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And you work in what industry?
Right now I'm doing medical transport because, frankly, I'm a diesel mechanic by trade.
Okay.
And the diesel or the steel industry tanked for a couple years because of all the steel that China dumped on us. So when these tariffs on foreign steel started popping up, it really makes us really happy up here that we can start revitalizing all the lost jobs that we had.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen some hiring yet, Andy, as a result of that?
Hiring, yes. They're firing up one mine that had been, they had started to build it, and they basically stopped because the production wasn't worth them building it. They're back to getting that up to running. TTAC is bringing back a bunch of people that have been laid off for years. I mean, there's people up here that have been laid off for 3-4 years with the uncertainty. And we're seeing a lot of people getting ready to get back to work and a lot of places starting to ramp up production.
Really good to have your call. Thanks very much from the view on the Iron Range to John in Minneapolis. John, what does this look like from your standpoint?
Well, I just have a small fabrication steel shop, and just in the last month since Trump introduced the new tariffs, my metal prices have gone up by 25% to 30%, depending on what they are. So,
explain to me why that is.
I would imagine it's just because I fear of losing those imports that are maybe a little bit cheaper than what's made here. And I know that's bad for the Iron Range, but that's just a cost that gets put up to my customers.
So have you had to pass, you said steel prices for you have gone up 25%. Have you had to pass that on to customers, and what's been the reaction?
Yeah, immediately. It's I guess that's just kind of the way Customers are just dealt with it just because that's what I have to do. So nobody's happy about paying more, but I still have to make a dime. So,
thanks very much for the call, John. So, Mary, when you said a moment ago that there could be some tough outcomes here for families and owners of businesses, is this what John was describing there, some of what you're talking about?
Well, both of these gentlemen make, you know, very compelling cases, and this really, you know, makes real the kind of redistributional effects we get when we try to approach this problem with tariffs. We have been, you know, trying to deal with China steel overcapacity for many years. There were many ways to deal with it. In fact, we actually import a very, very small amount of steel from China because we've already placed anti-dumping duties and countervailing duties, basically taxes on their goods, the fact that so little of these tariffs hit China was reflected in the fact that many of our close allies, you know, just were very upset with the steel tariffs, China, Mexico, European Union, South Korea, and have been asking for exemptions. There will be many exemptions given to the steel tariffs. So we think that there would have been a better way to protect steel and iron without causing all of the trouble for downstream users that we're starting to see right now. And there are far more jobs downstream than there are actually, you know, making steel and iron. Now, that having said that, that doesn't mean that those jobs are unimportant. Those jobs are important. However, we have to do it in the smartest way possible. And taking
yes,
a baseball bat is just not it.
Yeah. PJ, you were going to say?
I was going to say, I believe our number one source of steel is Canada, and our number two is the European Union. Those are both two very strong allies. And a lot of that is because the United States back in, I think it was 2011, correct me if I'm wrong, Mary, the United States did take action to try to prevent dumping, and there have been many sets of tariffs. But China is the number one producer of steel worldwide, so if they cannot export to the United States market, they are dumping it other places around the globe. So it is definitely a real problem that China has been dumping steel. But the solution that the Trump administration has come up with of importing across the board 25% tariffs on steel would not address the real problem of China dumping, because we only imported a small fraction of our steel
from
China.
Okay, so this is news to me, and I think this is important to understand, PJ. When you say, you know, they've got a lot, many other economies that they can dump cheap steel into. And if the United States thinks that they can really affect that with these 25% tariffs, China looks at the rest of the world and says, we've got a lot of other places we can do this. What's the outcome of that?
Well, for many years, the world has been concerned about this, and they have been meeting at the WTO level in Geneva, the World Trade Organization, to try to attack Chinese dumping. But the reality is, if you are a manufacturer anywhere, manufacturer in Russia, manufacturer in Minnesota, you are trying to find ways to cut costs. So if you find a way to get a cheaper steel, then you might try to find how to do that. And you know, sometimes China has been doing it through what is called transshipment, where they would export the steel to South Korea, and then South Korea will turn it into ball bearings or some other type of product, and then export it to the United States. So you know, there is a component of it that is coming from the dumping. So that is a serious problem. And you know, how do you sort of attack that? You need a global effort to restrain China from doing that.
A lot of coordination, you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is very tempting when you see just a little, you know, a little lower price to take the dump steel if you are a manufacturer. But there really has to, you know, be strong sanctions in place for that to happen.
Pradna Joshi is one of our guests today. She's Politico's trade and agriculture editor. And we're talking with Mary Lovely. She's an economist at Syracuse University and a fellow at the Peterson Institute. We asked them to come on and talk to us about the political geography of these proposed tariffs. And as I said in the introduction, here in the upper Midwest, it is not academic. I mean, we have crops that China buys, and we produce things that may end up with higher tariffs on them? And acknowledging here that this is complicated and we're hearing the reasons why, but what is the outcome? What are the outcomes of that? And what are the politics and the geography of that? And how well does China understand that? I'm asking you this morning, if you work in the ag or the manufacturing sectors, are you calculating the cost of this? Are you already seeing a difference of these proposed tariffs? And for all of us, do you think that this is an effective way to get China to reform the way they do business? I'll put that question to our guests as well, but I'm interested in what you think about it. 651-227-6000 on Twitter at Carrie NPR, where Mark asks, Mary, do trade imbalances really matter? He says, I have a trade imbalance with the guy that sells me beer. He never buys anything from me. So do I have to put some kind of tariff on him to stop him from ripping me off? Well, that's a prosaic example, but it doesn't fit with the conversation.
Yes, it definitely fits, because President Trump has repeatedly expressed his ire at China for our having such a large trade deficit with China. And the bilateral trade deficit is basically irrelevant. If we are somehow able to reduce that deficit with China, it will simply pop up someplace else, because it has to do with our overall macroeconomic imbalance. And people don't like those words, macroeconomic imbalance, but it's really about how much we spend versus how much we save. And, U.S. households like to spend. We're not the best savers in the world. And we just had a very large tax cut, which means that the government will now be in deficit even further. So This is going to mean that we're going to be borrowing more from the world. The overall trade deficit will go up regardless of what happens with China. Focusing on that bilateral deficit is really pushing us, I think, toward policies that are not effective. PJ was, really put her finger on it when she said that China is able to dump steel into the world market. This steel will find a way around whatever barriers. What we have to do is attack the problem at the source. And that was underway. We need to join with our trading partners and like-minded countries to approach China about this. They are trying. They have their own political problems in terms of shutting down some of these mills. And actually, international pressure could be helpful to them in terms of getting this rebalancing within their own industry. I know for some people that will say, well, that's kind of pie in the sky. I don't think so. And I also think we have to see, I think we are beginning to see the negative impact of that kind of emotional thing. We just, we want to go after them. And that has a big cost for producers in the United States.
A call here from Ken in Blaine. Hi, Ken.
Hello.
Hi. What are you thinking about?
I just want to bring this up. You know what? Doing nothing like we've done for the last 12, 20 years against China, that's where it's gotten us with China. China stealing all of our technology, and something has to be done. And in the process of something happening to be done, there may be some temporary collateral damage. But I buy American whenever possible, and I will pay extra for it.
Mm-hmm. Pradna, I think I caught Mary saying to us there was a collaboration of countries that were trying to work with China to make fundamental change. But I hear our callers, Ken, saying this didn't look like anything was really happening. It was time to shake the market up.
Well, actually, I was going to say we have been doing things for the last 20 years, especially with the dumping. Like I said, basically about less than 10% of our steel comes from China. So that the reality is that, we aren't importing that many, that much in China steel. But when you take a look at the drop-off in manufacturing jobs, I think it feels real. It does feel real, especially in the Midwest, when you see these jobs cut. But the reality is also that American manufacturing output has grown. So even if we have fewer people employed in the manufacturing sector, American output has grown, except during the Great Recession. It really did take a sharp downturn, and that's because our economy contracted. So So the reality is that because we're in a global economy, trade has actually become a big part of our economy. Actually, it's always been a big part of our economy, dating back to Thomas Jefferson. So trade is, you know, trade is one of the reasons that the colonies were so valuable to Britain. So so this is the reality, is that we are going to be in a global trading atmosphere, and how do you sort of respond to that? Is it just by setting up barriers, or by, you know, taking actions that do address the bigger problem rather than something that you think is going to address the problem?
Mary, I spotted something that the Chinese deputy finance minister said the other day, and I wanted to ask you about this. China apparently believes, or maybe this is, maybe they're saying this for public consumption, but they say they're importing too many soybeans, by the way, from the United States. And as I said, they buy a lot of Minnesota soybeans. So the deputy finance minister said this: U.S. government subsidies have affected cultivation of soybeans in China. Is he saying that the U.S. government provides subsidies to farmers, and that's an adverse incentive for Chinese farmers to grow soybeans? Am I translating that right?
Yes, Carrie, I think you are translating that correctly. But obviously, this is a statement in the midst of a back and forth between the two countries. I doubt if they'd be raising these issues if we weren't in the middle of this, at least the beginning of a trade war with them. So I think of that as a mainly political statement, they're saying that there are subsidies every country uses.
Yes.
And if you want to go after ours, we'll go after yours.
But, I mean, we should acknowledge that when farmers talk about we just want a level playing field, well, farmers get some incentives from the United States, too, in the form of subsidy money.
Yes.
And I think, right, Mary?
PJ, go ahead.
I was going to say, President Trump has directed the USDA to take action to try to protect American farmers, although both the USDA and the Trump administration have been very vague about it. But if, we do have basic farm subsidies, we have crop insurance, we have margin protection programs. I'm not exactly sure what the percentages are on soy. I'd have to look it up. I know a little more on dairy.
Uh-huh.
But even with the margin protection programs, as you know, the dairy industry has been devastated by low prices. There have been a lot of farmer suicides. It's been a huge problem. So soy is actually one of our buoyant industries. The prices haven't been as depressed as other commodities have. 30% of our China's imports come from the United States, and soybeans are one of the, really truly American grown products because the soil here is good. The conditions are good. The alternative is actually places like Brazil and Argentina that would benefit from tariffs because it wouldn't necessarily be Chinese farmers.
And so, Mary, just to be clear about you, what you were saying, too, is you're saying, yes, China does this, United States does this, many countries do this, and they probably, this is all part of this back and forth, them raising that issue. Okay.
The specific quote that you referred to over the weekend, I believe, was part of the posturing. I mean, we've had our president has tweeted out a lot of posturing as well. So it's the back and forth we see right now. PJ brings up a lot of important information about the U.S. Agricultural programs. But we can see these things change. I believe USDA has been reporting that soy shipments to the EU are already increasing and those to China already decreasing. So we're already seeing rearrangement. And that's affecting ports on the West Coast, which are not going to see the exports to China, and helping ports on the East Coast. So this goes back to this redistribution. We are going to see some people who are benefiting from these, but we're going to see many more people who are not benefiting from these tariffs.
Okay. Let me grab a call here from Congressman Rick Nolan. Congressman, you happen to be listening in. I'm glad you called.
Well, thank you. It's a great discussion you're having here this morning. I couldn't resist wanting to weigh in.
What do you want to say?
Well, I want to say that a couple of years ago, when many of the mines had shut down, others were shutting down up on the Iron Range, with the help of the Obama administration, we were able to secure tariffs on imported Chinese steel of 525%. I mean, that is huge. And what's interesting is that the Chinese accepted that without firing back on anything.
That,
they
that
knew
is
they
interesting.
Were cheating. And as a result of that, thousands of miners went back to work. Thousands more people in the engineering and related services went back to work. At an economic forum here in Duluth just last week, it was pointed out that mining and related services and incidentally logging were the stronger sectors of our economy up in northeastern Minnesota. And without that, we'd be in a steep recession. What's interesting is that what's taking place now, if 525% tariffs cause no concern whatsoever, even though it was of great benefit to the Iron Range, why is it that 25% is suddenly the cause for a great trade war? And in my judgment, it's posturing and bluster, because none of that that's taking place now has even occurred at this point in time.
Yeah, and Congressman, what you're saying is also, I think, part of the answer to we haven't done anything about this in 10 years. I think you're also giving us more evidence that there had been negotiations and there had been some punitive moves on this. They just didn't get that much attention.
Well, that's exactly true. And my main point is that international trade is a fact and a reality of life and a benefit to all of us. But, you know, what is better is fair trade. And what is even better yet is trade that's carefully and thoughtfully negotiated and not a bunch of big bullies shouting with big sticks and declaring war on trade against one another. This is just not smart.
You're sounding very Minnesotan there, Congressman. Good to have the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
PJ, what about that question that Rick Nolan is asking? I mean, we imposed big tariffs on them and the Chinese went along with that. What's the difference?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that like the congressman was saying, we have been taking actions over the years. There's always been, you know, on every good, every administration has had taken a look at places where there has been cases of dumping. The Bush administration famously tried to do a similar a steel action back in 2002 with little effect. In terms of attacking China. But if you really do want to sort of isolate China, the way to do that is by joining with partners. One of the first things that the Trump administration did was withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The TPP was specifically designed to isolate China and have the other Asian countries, and the other countries in the Pacific Rim, including Canada, Mexico, Chile, you know, sort of be a counterweight to China. And by pulling out of that, you know, the United States lost the opportunity to have lower tariffs in those other 11 countries. So there has to be concerted efforts that that do attack the problem. And also we are dealing with a slightly different administration, both in the United States and in Canada. Mm. President Xi has consolidated a lot of power. He, you know, they do subsidize state-owned factories there. You know, they have a lot more power to hold out for longer in this situation. You know, President Xi's government, I think, realizes that they have a little more power to withstand a trade war than the Trump administration does.
PJ, know you're a busy woman. I'm going to say thank you so much for being part of us and giving us some insight on the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
PJ is Politico's trade and ag editor. And Mary, a question from you, an economics question here from Martin in Golden Valley. Hey, Martin, what do you want to know?
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I keep hearing about dumping of steel and cheating, but I'm wondering what the broader economic situation or explanation is there. If China is selling steel below their cost to make it, how can that be a long-term benefit to them?
Good question.
And if they're selling it at a competitive price based on their cost to make it, isn't that what everyone expects of a marketplace.
How do they afford to do this, Mary?
I love Minnesota. The people definitely are well-educated and thinking hard about all these problems. Well, it is a problem for China. China has been trying to downsize the industry. It is costly for the government. Many of these plants are either directly or indirectly state-owned or receive loans, which perhaps may not be able to be repaid. So there is a subsidy aspect to it, and they're trying to reduce it. They had trouble moving as fast as they would want. You can imagine that even though it is a communist country run by the Chinese Communist Party, they still have to be concerned about the welfare of people and downsizing very, very quickly in this sector is not easy. Again, I think international pressure on China makes that political calculation a little bit more in favor of downsizing more quickly. And as PJ mentioned, we lost the opportunity to be part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That is a forum within which we could have exerted pressure on China with a bunch of our friends. And I think that would have been quite a powerful response and pushed the Chinese to move faster to downsize. As you mentioned, this is not good for them in the long run. It's unsustainable. So we're all trying to move in the same direction. We want it to go faster.
So, Mary, I have about a minute left, but what I've been wondering about is it broken? I mean, are the things that the president wants to do and the way this is creating friction in this relationship irreparable, or is this something that if you had, I don't know, if President Trump had a change of mind or some new president came in 2 years, could pretty quickly repair this?
Right now, it could be very quickly repaired. So far, very few of the tariffs have actually been implemented. PJ mentioned the Chinese retaliation on steel and aluminum. The others have not. So the damage is not there yet. But the longer this goes on, the more the damage will start to accumulate. Many of the tariffs that Trump has proposed are on machinery. And the U.S. is exporting a lot of machinery to China. And, you know, potentially those kinds of industrial plants could be hurt. So we're not just going to be talking about steel and aluminum very soon. We're going to be talking about a whole host of other exporters. The tariffs that have been placed on so-called IP-intensive goods. Mm-hmm. So these are goods where we think there's a lot of intellectual property and perhaps of the industries that China is targeting for the future. Our tariffs raise the cost for all of our manufacturers who use those goods. And many of these goods, the overwhelming majority of the goods, are inputs into things that our American corporations use to sell to us or to then re-export to the rest of the world. So as our costs go up, international customers will find alternative suppliers. And since we're doing this on our own, the rest of the world is going to be very happy to provide China with those goods.
Mary,
so again, we're not just working one-on-one. We're in a world where there's lots of other places to buy and sell.
Forgive the interruption. Please come back and continue the conversation with us on this, all right? Really good to have
Thank you.
Mary Lovely with us from Syracuse University. Thank you.